CNBC's Chip Market piece today says SK Hynix is seeking to raise as much as $29.4 billion, and the stock rose after Micron's earnings put AI memory demand back in the foreground. That is a very plain sentence, but it's a good place to start because it isn't another model card, benchmark table, or demo of an agent clicking around a browser. It is a memory supplier going to the market for AI scale money. And the question I kept coming back to was simple enough. When AI demand shows up in the real economy, where does it ask for cash first? Today, at least, it asks the memory company.
Memory often gets treated as the supporting actor until it gets scarce. GPUs get the headlines. Custom inference chips get the launch posts. Power gets the politics. High bandwidth memory makes the accelerator useful for these workloads. If SK Hynix can raise that kind of capital around AI investment, the market is pricing memory supply as one of the hard parts of the system, not as a commodity footnote.
Right, and the limit matters here. One financing story doesn't prove a new infrastructure era by itself. Recent Braid and Construct episodes already spent real time on chip access, export controls, power agreements, and custom silicon, so I don't want to replay that whole argument. The new bit here is narrower and more concrete. A company inside the accelerator supply chain is trying to turn AI memory demand into balance sheet capacity. That is what the CNBC item lets us say.
There's also a funny inversion here. For years, the mental model was that AI companies buy compute from hyperscalers, hyperscalers buy chips, and the chip companies capture the upside. The SK Hynix story reminds you that even the chip company is sitting on top of another constraint. Somebody has to finance the memory expansion, somebody has to commit to supply, and somebody has to believe the demand curve won't vanish before the new capacity pays back.
That's the detail in the story that feels closest to the craft of building systems. We talk about context windows and long-running agents as if they're only software features. Longer conversations, more parallel work, persistent state, and retrieval all look like product choices from the user side. Underneath them is an appetite for memory bandwidth and memory capacity. The user sees a longer conversation. The operator sees a different hardware bill. The supplier sees a reason to raise almost $30 billion.
And the cash has a time dimension that software people are bad at feeling. A prompt change can go live this afternoon. A factory, a packaging line, a supply agreement, or a listing process moves on a very different clock. So when a memory company raises money for AI investment, it's partly an answer to demand today and partly a bet on what model serving will need after the current generation of products is already stale.
That gives us the route for the rest of the episode. We'll start with memory as capital, then move to agents. Today's paper flood isn't about one magic architecture. It's about the machinery around agents. Red teaming, policy rules, trace verification, memory, and tool use decisions. And then we'll end in medicine, where the interesting AI papers today aren't generic capability claims. They are trials, logging proposals, and failure tests in domains where a plausible answer can hurt somebody.
Good. And I'd keep the AI engineer videos in the background today. AI Engineer published two new talks around agentic systems and build systems, which fits the same production agents theme, but without transcripts in hand, the responsible move is to treat them as pointers. The paper cluster gives us enough source detail to talk about what's changing without pretending a title is a transcript.
The Rift Bench paper from Fujitsu introduces a dynamic red teaming method for agentic AI systems. The concrete claim is that it evaluated 45 agentic systems with 105 adversarial probes, which instantiate into more than 10,000 attack tests. The mechanism is called node spec. First, it discovers a structured representation of the target agent system. Then, it uses that representation to choose and run system-specific adversarial probes.
That's a good detail because it moves the test away from the user message as the only attack surface. A lot of older safety evaluation still feels like, can I get the model to say the forbidden sentence? Rift Bench is trying to look at the actual agent, the tools, memory, components, interaction paths, and execution traces. If the system can write files, call APIs, and carry state across steps, the red team has to follow those paths.
Exactly. The paper is explicit that agentic systems inherit prompt injection, data exfiltration, and jailbreak-style problems, but they amplify them through persistent state, tool invocation, and inter-agent communication. That's the difference between evaluating a language model and evaluating a working agent. The model can be vulnerable in the sentence. The agent can be vulnerable in the sequence.
And then the other security paper makes that sequence much less abstract. The offensive-security-agent analysis looks at 12 agentic tools used for security operations. It says most of them share design flaws that let an active adversary exfiltrate API keys, establish persistence, and in many cases fully compromise the operator's machine, even when the agent is inside a sandboxed container. That's a grim sentence, but it's not vague.
The table in that paper is the detail that gives the claim weight. It walks through systems like Pentest GPT, Strix, AI Recon, Pent AGI, Red Amon, and others. For each one, it marks whether the attacker can get code execution on the worker, steal secrets, persist, turn the agent against the operator, or compromise the host. The headline result is ugly. They report host compromise paths in 10 of the 12 systems they studied.
The twist is that these are security agents. They're pointed at adversarial targets by design. If I'm an attacker and I control the target the agent is inspecting, I can feed the agent deceptive artifacts that are not labeled as a prompt injection attack. The paper talks about contextual deception and reward hacking, and that distinction matters. You don't have to write, "Please ignore your instructions," when the whole environment can be arranged to make the unsafe action look like progress.
That's why I like pairing the offensive security paper with Rift Bench. Rift Bench says, discover the system structure and generate adaptive probes. The offensive security paper says, your target can become the adversarial input, and the bad path can run through containers, secrets, and host boundaries. Put together, they make agent safety feel less like content moderation and more like system security.
There is a practical humility in that, too. The paper doesn't say the fix is a stronger instruction hierarchy. It argues for architectural mitigations, least privilege, segmentation, secret isolation, and assuming that the model can be manipulated. That is an important tone difference. It treats the model as one component in an adversarial system, not as the place where every problem must be solved.
AutoSpec is the gentler cousin in this segment. It starts from expert-designed safety rules for agents and tries to evolve them using safe and unsafe annotations from execution traces. The authors use counterexample-guided inductive synthesis and inductive logic programming, which sounds forbidding, but the problem is easy to recognize. A rule that blocks a destructive command today will miss a different bad sequence tomorrow, and a rule that is too broad will block normal work.
I liked their example because it's exactly the kind of thing static rules miss. Reading credentials can be benign. Calling an external API can be routine. Doing those in sequence may be exfiltration. So the safety rule can't only look for one bad token in one command. It has to look at traces and relationships. AutoSpec reports 291 execution traces across code execution and embodied-agent domains. After rule evolution, the paper reports F1 scores of 0.98 and 0.93. That's a paper result, not a deployment standard, but it points at the right object, the trace.
Very trace goes after a related problem from the reasoning side. It formalizes chain-of-thought traces into a domain-specific language, so dependencies, computations, and deductions can be checked step by step. I found the split between deterministic checks and scoped model audits especially clarifying. Arithmetic, dependency ordering, and constraint satisfaction can be checked mechanically. Softer semantic steps get a narrower audit.
That's closer to how people review serious work than how most model evaluation is described. You don't only ask, did the final answer match? You ask where the derivation broke, which premise got smuggled in, whether step 7 depended on step 9, and whether the calculation says 42 while the state says 35. Veritrace is trying to make that inspection target explicit enough that a repair pass can fix the broken region instead of regenerating the whole answer and hoping.
These papers don't mean agent safety has been solved. These are frameworks, benchmarks, and proposals, but the same object keeps appearing. Traces, execution traces, reasoning traces, tool call traces, and provenance traces. Once an agent can act, a one-shot answer tells you too little. You need the path, and you need enough structure around the path to test it.
I'd separate demos from systems here. A demo can hide the path. A system has to remember it. It has to show which tool was called, which key was exposed, which policy rule fired, which memory was read, and which earlier step poisoned the later one. The safety work today is trying to make those things inspectable without pretending every agent will be hand-reviewed by a patient expert.
Metis, from researchers at CUHK, Huawei, and Wuhan University, starts with a concrete memory question. Should an agent remember an experience as text, or should it turn that experience into code it can call later? The paper says existing self-evolving agents usually pick that representation at design time, and Metis tests the trade-off directly on the same experiences.
That's a good agent design question, because text memory and code memory behave differently. Text memory is cheap to create and transfers better because the model can reinterpret it. Code memory is faster at runtime because the routine becomes a callable tool, but the paper says it costs roughly 2.5 times more React turns to construct, and around 1 million additional tokens in their profiling. It can also get brittle when the task changes.
Metis uses both. It stores textual experience as execution plans, environment facts, and common pitfalls, then selectively crystallizes recurring plans into validated, callable tools. On AppWorld, the paper reports up to a 20.6% accuracy improvement over React and up to a 22.8% execution cost reduction. I like the word selectively there. It says you don't turn every memory into a tool. You wait for repeated reuse and a stable procedure.
That feels true to actual software. Some knowledge belongs in prose because it needs judgment every time. Some knowledge belongs in a function because the judgment has settled. The interesting part for agents is that the boundary can move. A repeated plan can become a tool after enough evidence accumulates, and the agent can stop spending reasoning tokens on a routine it already understands.
Bayesian control for coding agents looks at a different boundary. When should the agent pay for more evidence? The paper frames coding agent orchestration as cost-sensitive sequential hypothesis testing. The controller maintains a belief that the current candidate is correct, then decides whether to call another critic, refine the solution, pay for a verifier, or stop.
That is refreshingly unsentimental. A coding agent doesn't need infinite reflection. It needs to know whether another test, critic, or verifier call is worth its cost. The paper evaluates 6 generators across 9 coding benchmarks and finds Bayesian control is most valuable when verification is expensive and critics are informative but imperfect. It also says simpler policies can win when verification is cheap or public tests are highly predictive.
That negative result is important. The paper isn't saying every agent should use a Bayesian controller. It says the controller earns its keep in particular cost regimes. If the verifier is cheap, just verify. If the tests are predictive, use them. If the candidate is probably correct, don't spend a lot of money proving what you already know. The contribution is a way to make that decision explicit.
And the belief state becomes a product surface in its own way. If the controller has an interpretable correctness score that beats token probabilities and raw tool success baselines, then you can imagine the agent saying, I'm 0.72 confident because 2 critics agreed, 1 public test failed, and the verifier is expensive. That is much easier to inspect than a spinner that says thinking.
The governed shared memory paper takes us from one agent's experience to fleets of agents. It argues that shared memory isn't only a retrieval problem. It is a distributed systems problem with scoped access, temporal correctness, provenance, synchronization, and policy-controlled propagation. The authors instantiate the idea in Memclaw, a production multi-tenant memory service. Then they test it with Argus Fleet against the live REST API.
And the negative results are the useful results. They found provenance was strong. All 50 depth 4 derivation chains reconstructed with the correct writer identity at sub-second per hop latency. but they also found an asymmetric scope enforcement gap on direct get-by-ID for agent-scoped credentials. A near-duplicate gate could reject contradictory writes before the contradiction detector saw them. That is exactly the kind of system detail that decides whether shared memory is safe.
Easy with useful. I know what you mean, but the detail isn't dry if it can leak memory across agents. It's a reminder that long context retrieval doesn't give you governance for free. Bigger context helps the model see more text. It doesn't answer who is allowed to see which memory, which version is current, or whether a retrieved fact can be traced back to its writer.
Fair. The detail looks administrative until it fails. Then it becomes the system. RE-MMOA is the more researchy cousin here. It argues that mixture of agent systems stop improving with depth because errors accumulate, early good reasoning gets lost, and agents converge on redundant paths. Their answer is ranked reasoning memory plus diversified routing, so different agents see different combinations of successful and failed traces.
That paper stays inside inference time reasoning rather than product memory, but it rhymes with MEDIS and MEMCLAW in a technical way. Memory isn't just recall, it is a control surface. You decide which memories become tools, which traces deserve propagation, which failed paths should remain visible as contrast, and which agent is allowed to read which state. Those choices change the behavior of the system.
And they change who can debug it. If memory is only a hidden blob stuffed into context, nobody can tell whether the agent is learning, overfitting to its own mistakes, leaking across scopes, or paying too much to rediscover the same routine. The papers today are giving names to those decisions. Not final answers, but names are the beginning of engineering taste.
The strongest medical paper in today's set is RAW-DAR-RESDI, a 32 billion parameter open source reasoning model for rare disease diagnosis. The authors say they trained it on 49,170 public free text cases and 104,666 synthetic cases. Then they tested it across public benchmarks, 4 external validation centers, a retrospective cohort, and a randomized physician assistance trial.
The randomized trial number is the one to say plainly, RAW-DAR assistance improved physicians' rare disease diagnostic accuracy by 21.44 percentage points compared with internet search alone. The retrospective cohort is also interesting because the model prioritized the final diagnosis before documented clinical suspicion in 61.06% of cases, with a reported potential lead time of 1.87 months. Those are paper claims, but they're much more useful than a leaderboard win.
Yes, and the paper is still a paper. We shouldn't say clinical practice changed today. What we can say is that the evidence form is better than the usual medical AI press release. It is a specialized model in a narrow domain with external validation, a retrospective timing claim, and a physician assistance trial. That combination gives the listener something to inspect.
It also puts synthetic data in a more grounded place. The RAW-DAR authors say phenotype-anchored synthetic narratives helped under data scarcity, with a monotonic scaling trend in the tested range. That's a subtle claim. It's not synthetic data solves rare disease. It's in a long-tail domain where cases are scarce, the way you generate the synthetic cases matters, and the trial gives you a place to check whether the training recipe translated into assistance.
The GI endoscopy hallucination paper is a useful counterweight. It benchmarks 9 hallucination detection methods on a gut VLM dataset with 4,392 test visual question answer pairs across 5 vision language models. The authors say the white box method RexTrust gets the highest AUC across all 5 models, with a peak AUC of 93.0 on MedGemma 4B. They also identify confident confabulation as a systemic problem.
Confident confabulation is a good phrase because it names the failure in clinician-friendly terms. The model can be wrong in a way that is internally consistent or high probability, so consistency checks and uncertainty checks can both get fooled. In medicine, that is the dangerous flavor of wrong. It doesn't look like noise. It looks like a settled answer attached to the wrong visual evidence.
And the domain detail matters. The paper says hallucination detection has mostly been evaluated on radiology datasets, while gastrointestinal endoscopy has variable lighting, organ-dependent visual patterns, and different findings like polyps, ulcerative colitis, esophagitis, and anatomical landmarks. A safety method that works on chest x-rays may not transfer to endoscopy. That isn't a philosophical point. It is an image distribution point.
Then the mental health safety paper widens the caution. It evaluates 6 proprietary language models across 16 DSM-5 conditions and uses 4 adversarial attack variants. The authors report that safeguards hold reliably only for suicide and self-harm. Eating disorders, substance use disorder, and major depressive disorder show failure rates up to 100%. That's a harsh counterpoint to the rare disease trial.
It keeps the episode grounded without flattening medicine into one conclusion. Rare disease diagnosis, GI endoscopy hallucination detection, and mental health conversation safety are different problems. A model that helps a physician rank rare diagnoses isn't the same system as a general chatbot giving mental health advice, and neither is the same as a vision language model answering endoscopy questions. The medical AI story today is that the evidence is getting more domain-specific, and the failures are too.
That's the turn I'm glad we're ending on. The good news isn't that AI is ready for medicine. The good news is that some papers are finally making claims a clinician, regulator, or hospital can interrogate. Trial design, external validation centers, audit logs, hallucination benchmarks, and harm taxonomies give people a way to say yes, no, or not yet with reasons.
So that's how I read Thursday, June 25th, 2026. SK Hynix is looking for AI scale capital because memory demand has become visible to the balance sheet. Agent papers are trying to make behavior inspectable through traces, evolving rules, controlled memory, and evidence-aware tool use. Medical AI papers are trying to replace general capability talk with trials and domain-specific failure tests.
And the connective tissue is more literal than grand. These systems need memory, and memory has consequences. It shows up as high-bandwidth memory on a chip package, text and code memories inside agents, shared state across fleets, reasoning traces inside multi-agent inference, and clinical records that should be logged before anyone trusts a model near patient care.
That also keeps me from overreading the day. I don't think Thursday, June 25th, 2026 is some grand turning point. It's a day when several ordinary-looking source types pointed at the same material problem. If AI systems are going to do longer jobs with more autonomy in more serious domains, memory stops being a metaphor. Somebody has to fund it, test it, scope it, verify it, and explain where it came from. Lenar Kess.